Great 1050 Chum Homecoming All-Star Reunion continues, 1973 to 1977. Very good years with some very good people, some of whom are in the room.
Yeah, well, just a second. I got to ask you something. I mentioned this earlier right off the top.
This is Tom Rivers speaking.
Thank you very much. Okay. Unemployed Tom Rivers, area code 416.
Scott Carpenter's with us, too.
Anyway, I wanted to ask you, when you do the intros on City TV for the movies, you do like Basil Rathbone and so-and-so, star in, and then you kind of ad-lib, you go right off the page, and it's like, this is one of the most terrible movies that was ever made, but if you want to watch it, go ahead, and that's fine by me. You know, on City Square. Do you ad-lib that? Is that
most
written for you?
Well, I've got two writers, but 4 out of 7 days, we're winging it, pretty much.
That's all I needed.
And I've seen most of the movies, so I know. We were talking about some of the great moments, the great music, and other things. We had some really big contests happening back in those days.
Yep.
Huge contests. I remember...
Don't Say Hello.
Don't Say Hello. Say I Listen to Chum. And my wife, who still listens to Chum and has all these years, used to answer her phone that way. And so, that was huge.
I think the biggest one was the star sign promotion.
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
Astrology was big in the 70s. Remember that?
Yeah. Oh.
And I remember the genesis of that. We were sitting at a jock meeting. Do you remember this meeting?
Probably not.
I missed
a lot of jock
there
meetings.
There were a few...
I only lived across the street.
Well, no, at this time I think you were probably living in San Diego because I think they'd fired you, and you were out, but whatever the case. But at any rate, we were at this meeting, and the program director at the time, J. Robert Wood, pulled out a button that had been used by CFTR, I believe, at the time, and they were going to start distributing these buttons around at McDonald's in the area. And he said, now, I don't think we need to let them do this. And so all of a sudden, out comes this box filled with these Chum stars. And remember, this button that they had was just a little white button with little blue letters on it. It just looked like El Crapola. And out comes this box. And there inside are these marvelous buttons that had this wonderful artistic design. And each one was separate. And each one had a number on the back of it, an individual number on the back. And they were your specific sign. And it wasn't going to be at McDonald's. No, no, no. We built kiosks and put them up all over town and put what we called Chum Chicks. They were actually models from the Walter Thornton Agency.
Back when you could say chick. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. And they liked being called Chum Chicks. And we put them in the kiosks at various locations, mostly shopping centers and so forth and so on. It just blew the other station's promotions right off the face of the earth and became one of the biggest things. You could not walk down the street in Toronto without seeing at least one or two of these Chum star signs on people. And it's just amazing the impact it had. I understood that there was something like a million of those that went out.
Yeah, joining us here at the Great Homecoming, by the way, with Tom Rivers, Scott Carpenter, I'm Mark Daly, of course, is Warren Cosford. And Warren was one of those people who walked around here and people would say, what does he do? But he's going to tell us. No,
he did nothing. He just walked around.
No, he did some great radio, which we're going to talk about later. But Warren.
Yeah, no, I was the production manager at Chum at that time. Yeah. And the star sign promotion, is so many wonderful memories about that. But one of the things that made that promotion work is we actually did give away things.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we didn't just talk about giving away money and stuff. We actually did it. And I'll give you an example. Through that whole star sign era, which was, I think, about 6 months to a year.
Yes, at least.
I used to take the bus home to Scarborough. Mm-hmm. I lived at Scarborough Golf Club Road in Lawrence.
Yeah. That's all right.
And if anyone who's ever taken that bus from the Eglinton Station will know...
You wouldn't do it unarmed now.
Well, the whole bus with turnover in terms of numbers of people on the bus about three times. That's a long bus ride.
Yeah, it is.
And so I would sit there with my briefcase on the bus waiting for someone to come on the bus with
a star sign so you could give them something.
And so they would sit down somewhere, and I would go over and sit down beside them, open up my briefcase, take out a tape machine, plug in the microphone. And you know how it is in buses. Mm-hmm. People don't look at people.
Yeah.
And people would start to look at me, wondering what weird thing this guy was doing. I'd take the microphone, and I'd turn to them and say, pardon me, what's that you're wearing on your shirt? And they'd say, well, that's the Chum button, the Chum star sign. Why are you wearing that star sign? Well, this is my star sign. Do you win something for winning this? Well, they give away prizes. I heard they give away money. Is that right?
Yeah. $100.
You don't really believe that a radio station gives away money for wearing a button, do you? I don't know. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm a star sign spotter from Chum. and you are wearing the Chum star sign, and because of that, I have a crisp new $100 bill. And I'd give it to them. And the bus would explode in applause.
And if you'll recall, we all went out.
And everybody went
out, and we had envelopes. Well, that's because they couldn't trust
you
with the money. But the rest of us, they trusted with the money because we know where that money would go. And we'd go out and with envelopes full of $100 bills. That was the biggie, as far as I'm concerned, and it left an impression with me that I maintain to this day, and that is, if you're going to do something, do it right. And I'd never seen anybody do anything like that. I mean, I'd never seen anybody put up kiosks, go out and buy all these things, and put that much effort into it just to be the best. And boy, that, I'll tell you what, that has been an impression that I've carried for the rest of my life.
And you know what? That's what Chum did at a lot of different levels.
Sure, I know.
We're talking about the contests.
Yeah.
Do you remember the documentaries?
Oh, absolutely.
Documentaries were marvelous. Part of the reason for doing these is a competitive reason. Mm-hmm. In other words, the competition is doing something. You were just saying they were doing their button.
Right.
So we just went out and we did something far bigger than anything anybody ever anticipated in terms of the other contest. And it was similar with the documentaries. We did three documentaries that, are legendary documentaries.
They're still running.
Absolutely.
Some of these.
The first documentary, radio documentary ever done of the Beatles, was done by Chum in 1970.
Right.
The only documentary done on Elvis Presley's life in his lifetime that he authorized, the Elvis Presley story, which is now called The Elvis Years in syndication, was produced here in the Chum Studios.
Yep.
And of course, the piece de resistance, I guess, would be The Evolution of Rock. 64 hours long documentary of the year.
Yeah, but does anybody remember? I mean, you talked about the competition aspect of that. I believe at the time, if I'm not mistaken, one of the stations in town here was running the Drake History of Rock. Were
that's
they not?
Right. They were.
And the idea was to do better than that,
that's right.
The Evolution of Rock came along and
was it not? The story on that was CKFH was going to be running the History of Rock.
Right.
And J. Robert Wood called us in and said, we've got to do something.
Got to beat
them. What can we do better than the History of Rock? And someone came up with the idea of the Beatles, because the Beatles were hot in 1970. They were breaking up. Mm-hmm. So we did the story of the Beatles. CKFH did the History of Rock and Roll, produced by some people in Los Angeles, and we just blew them away.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But
the Evolution, I got to do some interviews. I was going to party in L.A., and Warren says, well, here, take a tape machine, and you can do a few things. And probably the defining moment of that, I got to spend the day with Diana Ross. And just quick history, because of my Detroit background, a lot of old friends, Florence Ballard, who died tragically just before that, was a personal friend of mine. I actually was trying to help her out in her personal life. And Florence had passed away. She and Diana had a tremendous fall, a terrible bad history between them. So here I am this one morning, and it was morning, Diana's doorstep in Beverly Hills. George Burns was her next door neighbor. She answered the door in T-shirt and shorts, no makeup, screaming kids, and it was like, cool. So we went into this lovely interview, and we ended up going out to her pool afterwards, drinking Tom's favorite old drink, vodka and orange juice.
Is that right?
Until about four,
with Diana Ross.
Crying about
with the
Flo,
queen.
With the queen, just being herself.
Really,
she finally came and took the kids off her hands. And she actually talked very frankly about the bad days and the problems with Florence, and then we just spent the day together, and it was great.
I got to tell you, this guy got into a lot of trouble with me. I mean, I set him up with a tape machine, do the interview with Diana Ross, turns on the tape machine, and there's this damn canary in the background.
Well, the canary.
Singing all the way through the interview.
That's right, too.
I forgot about the canary. But it gives that realism to it.
Yeah.
It gives it that aura of realism.
Yeah, it's
but
nothing,
you guys...
nothing like hearing a canary do you keep me hanging on.
Yeah, that's right.
So what made Chum special to me through that era were the contests, the documentaries, and the third thing, and this was huge, was John Gilbert.
Oh, yeah. Johnny was a special guy. You know, he gets a lot of, at the time at least, he got a lot of bad press because he was essentially an unsophisticated kind of guy. He was actually more sophisticated than people give him credit for. But on the air, certainly, he was not particularly sophisticated. He was no Joe Pine.
Well, John Gilbert was a carny barker.
Yes.
And he'd be the first one to tell you. John ran away to the circus when he was a teenager and became a carny barker.
Yeah, and also
so he was a showman.
You know what else he did, and people don't realize this, he was once an announcer for burlesque. He was a burly announcer.
Yes, I remember him talking about that. Yeah.
But John was wonderful. I used to produce John's show, and a whole bunch of us around here would research and write the introductions for John. And what was wonderful about John?
He could just go with anything.
What was wonderful about John? I mean, it's the classic John Gilbert story, and you guys all knew him, so it was typical of him.
Yeah.
But I remember one time the topic was a capital punishment. Mm-hmm. Are you for or against it?
Uh-huh.
So John comes into my office and he says, what's the topic today? Says, capital punishment. Are you for or against it? He said, great. And he disappeared from my office door. And then he came back and shut.
I know
put,
it,
put his
up.
Head through the corner of the door and he said, am I for or against it?
Oh, jeez.
And I said, John, you're for it, and this is why. We went through all the reasons. And this was the wonderful thing about John.
He
argue any side of an argument.
I was still in the news booth one day, and he was doing the open to his show, and his guest was Penelope somebody. This is a funny story. So he comes on, he goes, when we come back, I'll be joined by my guest, Penelope so-and-so.
That's
so
right.
Bob Humanick was up that morning, and Bob gets in the talk, and he goes, John, it's Penelope. And John goes, whatever. The commercial break comes back. He comes back, and he goes, you know, welcome, joining me from the so-and-so association this morning is Penelope, whatever. Called her Penelope for the whole half hour, and she was afraid to correct him.
But John Gilbert was special because he really kind of was Oprah before Oprah.
Well,
I mean,
he was,
for the most part, what we did were family
lifestyle.
Kind of things.
Lifestyle.
Lots
stuff.
Of family stuff.
Remember the here's his talk show in the middle of this rock and roll station, too, which I think was astounding.
Do you remember the time when the lady called him up? And she was crying and whining because her furnace had gone out and she had no heat in her home for herself and her children and all the rest of that. And John Gilbert went on the air and he said, I am committing this radio station to getting you a new furnace. And, you know, upstairs, Alan Waters going, huh? He said, what? Oh, no, you know.
Yeah.
But the publicity that came out of that was worth solid gold, man.
Hey, listen,
but
one time.
He went into his own pocket and his own heart, too.
Yes, he did. Yeah. Yes, he did.
One time on John Gilbert's show, a woman called up and said, John, I'm committing suicide.
Yeah, and he talked her out.
And he talked her out of it. Yeah. I mean, this is the power of that show.
But you know something, having done talk radio for many, many years, that's the scariest thing that you can be involved in.
Oh.
It has happened to me, and the way he handled that was better than anybody I'd ever seen handle. I could never have done that. And John just talked to her, now, honey, you know, and he used those kinds of terms, and he was able to do that. He was able to communicate with those people one-on-one like nobody I'd ever seen in my life. Boy, there was a power with John Gilbert that his critics never realized, and that is he had an intimate and personal relationship with every listener he had. He'd never met any of them in his life. But when you were on the air, and when he was on the air, rather, and people were listening, that was a one-on-one that was unparalleled, as far as I'm concerned, in talk radio, any place I've ever been.
Yeah, nothing like being condescending when a woman's hanging on a ledge. Hi, honey. Hi, babe. Hey, how about a date after?
Only Rivers.
The Clint Eastwood movie.
Only Rivers.
The magic moment with Gilbert was I used to call my mother all the time, who lived in Winnipeg and had never heard John Gilbert, but I used to check with her to find out if certain topics were the right things to do, because my mother was kind of the audience.
Great barometer, yeah.
Sure. And and I was looking for a promotion to do with John.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, you'll recall, Lauren Green had a hit with Ringo.
Ringo.
And there were these narrative records had been on the radio. And my mother's
Deck of Cards, Wink Martindale.
That's right.
There you go.
And I used to be
Sinclair, the Americans, too.
Gordon Sinclair, the Americans, actually,
the original
was
Americans.
was at that time.
Yeah.
And this is actually
what
they can't
touch this MC Hammer. Oh, wait a minute. No, that wasn't one.
That was actually what made me think
though,
of this thing with Gilbert.
Can't touch that.
And so I asked my mother about it. And she said, remember that song you used to play on the radio in Winnipeg by Melba Montgomery? It was called No Charge. So I found the record, listened to it. It was sung. And so all we did was we turned it into a narrative.
Wow.
And it became like the top-selling record for Capitol in 1976.
With Johnny Gilbert.
John Gilbert. It was just amazing.
Let's remember it.
Our little boy came up to his mother in the kitchen one evening while she was fixing supper. And he handed her a piece of paper that he'd been writing on. And after his mom dried her hands on an apron, she read it. And this is what it said. For cutting the grass, $5. For cleaning up my room this week, $1. For going to the store for you, 50 cents. Babysitting my kid brother while you went shopping, 25 cents. Taking out the garbage, $1. For getting a good report card, $5. For cleaning up and raking the yard, $2. Total owed, $14.75. Well, I'll tell you, his mother looked at him, standing there expecting. And boy, I could see the memories flashing through her mind. So she picked up the pen, turned the paper over he'd written on, and this is what she wrote. For the 9 months I carried you, while you were growing inside me, no charge. And for all the nights that I've sat up with you, I've doctored and I've prayed for you, no charge. And for all the times and all the tears that you've caused through the years, there's no charge. You add it all up, the cost of my love is no charge.
The cost of my love is no charge.
And for all the nights that were filled with dread, and for the worries I knew were ahead, no charge. And for all the advice, the knowledge, and the cost of your college, no charge.
The cost of my love is no charge.
For the toys, food, clothes, and even wiping your nose, there's no charge, son. And when you add it all up, the full cost of real love is no charge. Well, friends, when our son finished reading what his mother had written, there were great big old tears in his eyes. And he looked straight up at his mother and said, "Mom, I sure do love you." And then he took the pen, and in great big letters he wrote, "Paid in full."
Well, my good friends, I really don't know how to say this, but I guess I better get to it. It would have been 7 years, the beginning of the third week in January of 1978, when I did my first show here on Chum as the host of the John Gilbert Show. We've had a lot of fun. We've had a lot of very traumatic, very loving, very caring, a lot of funny shows, a lot of educational shows. There have been some very emotional times, and there have been some very funny times. But I do hope that you have loved it and enjoyed it as much as I. This is our last show. This will be the last time, I guess, that we'll be able to say, as we usually say, the familiar sign-off for the John Gilbert Show. But I don't want any of you to think that I'm leaving, Chum, for I'm not. Because this station has treated me better than I have ever been treated in my 30-year career as a broadcaster. I've never had any interference and never had any problems with the people, the management and the staff, the programming department and everybody else. I guess the reason that we're ending it now is maybe because it's just getting a little too tough to do for me. Too tough to come up with a topic, sometimes too much emotion involved that I have to carry it home with me. Although Chum has said, and I want you to know, that they have not said that they're getting out of the talk show business forever. Who knows? Someday soon we may both get back together and come back and do a talk show again. But this is the last one for a period of time. I would like to tell you a moment what I will be doing, and that is we'll be doing the John Gilbert Report, which will be heard periodically throughout the day, incorporated as a part of the newscasts. So rather than you call in to us here on the telephone with some of your problems and your complaints, etc., we hope that we'll be able to go out and see you so that we can come up with those problems and answers for you the same way. I'm looking forward to it. I'm pretty excited about it. But I want you to know that I'm really, really going to miss you. You don't sit behind a microphone like I have and talk to the countless hundreds of thousands of people that I have over a period of 7 years and walk away with it with a clear conscience. I can't. But I wanted to thank you that you have given me the greatest success, the greatest pleasure, and I guess the greatest feeling of helping people that I've ever had. A very, very special thanks has to go to George Nicholson, who's been the producer of my show for almost the full 7 years that I've been here. And without George, the show would never have been as successful as it has been. He deserves at least 50% of the credit. to Rob Collis, my technical director, who keeps me on time with the commercials, etc. A very special thanks. And needless to say, my right and sometimes my left arm included belongs to my secretary, Teresa Lumsden. We'll come back on the air here early in the new year with the John Gilbert Reports. Until then, the good Lord willing and we able, we'll be back with you soon. Until then, I'm John Gilbert. Thanks for listening. It's been a pleasure.
Scotty Carpenter said it best. Gibby was a great one.
Oh, man, there's nobody like him. There's nobody like him. And yeah. That sign-off is probably as well-known in Canadian broadcasting as any words ever spoken. You know, I think that just about anybody that lived in Toronto in the 1970s will remember those words. Thanks for listening. It's been a pleasure.
Another great piece of Chum energy. We've got to take a break. The great 1050 Chum Homecoming All-Star Reunion, 1973 to 77, will continue on Chum everywhere.